Welcome to Weekly Geek Speak. I'm Andrew.
I am Scott.
And I'm Steve.
And you can find us on weeklygeekspeak.com. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and Podcastland. If you are a social media fan, we are on Facebook and Twitter. This week, we will be talking Mad Max, plus much more exciting gubbins on this week's Weekly Geek Speak.
I'm going to turn down this nice Americanized dial.
Sorry, I thought that's the angle we were...
I'm going to turn it back up again.
Now, time to celebrate a birthday. A very merry birthday too. I can't carry this on. Batman! It's another Batman's birthday.
Yay.
Which one?
Christian Bale.
No.
Adam Wee.
Adam Wee. Adam West. Adam West. That's my best Adam West impression. Adam West, yeah. Kind of... a generation's Batman. Many generations Batman, in a way.
Oh, indeed, yeah.
Not the first, but one of the first TV screen interpretations of the Bat. And what a costume.
He's an icon.
Mm.
I don't think it's fair to say.
And I really like the way he, even though, as we mentioned briefly last week, he had a bit of a tough time. There's a film coming out, how it was tough. He still... respects the character he was, and he's quite a funny gent. I mean, he's on Family Guy and things nowadays. He knows how to have a laugh at himself.
Well, we as human beings, we always focus on the negative. So the negative, if you're an actor and you get typecast, would be, oh, they only see me as Batman and I'm never going to do anything. But you're very lucky to play a very integral part in an icon's mythology and legend that will outlive us all. It's I wouldn't mind being Adam West.
No, and I think that's what lots of these actors who strop should think about when it comes to that. You're rich, you've been made, and that's the product that made you.
Yeah. There's a podcast, if anyone's interested, Adam West, Ralph Garman, who's a massive Batman fan. Mm. Ralph Garman interviewed him, Adam West, and An Evening with Adam West, and it's a great listen. He's a brilliant man, and Ralph Garman really brings the best out of him, because he knows sort of what to ask him and stuff. It's really well worth a listen.
It's also the birthday of a guy who, it's a bit of a shame, he seems to have turned out to be a bit of a cock in recent interviews, but he's going to be in the new Batman. It's Jeremy Irons, who's played some good characters. He came out, I think it was around the time of Gay Marriage, wasn't it? And he said some slightly obnoxious things.
Really?
Which is a big shame. But put that aside, he's
actors
played.
Actors usually quite a liberal lot, and I'm upset about that.
Yeah, I can't remember what it says, but it was very obnoxious. But to gloss over that, he's going to be in the new Batman, he's going to be the new Alfred. He's been in some good roles, very thespian theatrical actor, and he was Scar, which is probably my favourite role of his. So yeah, happy birthday, Adam West and Jezza Irons.
The
J-Man. I wanted to just bring it. It probably will end up a bit of an outro game, but I thought we'd kick it off here. I was going to... remember when we used to go and Steve used to throw out weird tweets saying, best film or scene with a tissue box in?
Yeah, go!
What we'll do is let's try and incorporate that into the podcast. Is I will... we'll circle jerk it.
Okay.
So, for example, if I say, easy one, best movie scene with a train in it... so let's say like Stand By Me, this, that and the other.
Yeah,
Thomas the Tank Engine. But what we'll do is like today I'll say best scenes with a train in it, we'll have a quick chat about them, encourage the listeners to throw out their favourite train ones, but we'll also, the next person in the circle, Steve, will just say a word, anything, egg, and then next time we record we will think about what's our favourite egg scenes in films and bring that.
Okay
we'll see how that goes.
Like it.
We'll see how it goes. It might work, might not,
give it a go,
but it's quick 5-minute thing to stick at the end. So yeah, well, we're on trains. It's an obvious one. It's a big one. And what's your favourite train scenes in cinema?
Back to the Future Part 3.
Good call.
It turns it into a time machine, man.
Yeah,
I mean, just top that if you dare.
I mean, you've already mentioned Stand By Me. That's got to be one of mine. What else? For some reason I thought Money Train with Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. Oh my from God. 1995.
It's got to be more than that.
People in that film don't remember it.
The scene in Ghost with the train, we've discussed it before in the podcast. Mm.
Oh, the subway.
The subway train in Ghost. Is a
and the Once Upon a Time in the West. I don't know why the train sticks out with me in that. There's a scene where
iconography. Yeah.
There's the guy, the main bad guy, sat on his train. He's always in his train carriage, and then I think it is Charles Bronson's like climbing on the top of it, sneaking, having a listen and things, and then he gets shot. It's very good. It's a very good film.
Scorsese is Hugo because he evokes a lot of early cinema imagery, like the Lumiere brothers with the train. So that's
and one of the oldest and most dramatic. The acted train films, Brief Encounter. Well, they're going back there now.
Oh, yeah.
But all about an affair in a station, which is a good film, but has those 50s sensibilities of, no, just go and return to your family and forget about the whole thing.
Oh, Jeffrey!
That's his name. Pick a word. It's your turn. Anything. First item that comes to your head.
Hats.
Best hat scenes. We'll talk about that next time we record. Favourite scenes involving a hat. We'll see how it goes.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Every other week, we have an open forum where we open the doors to topics that we wouldn't normally... I'm very English now. We wouldn't normally discuss on the podcast.
What is with all the region jumping?
The two accents I can do. I attempted an Australian one the other day and it was terrible.
Oh, just please.
Go on.
Just one line.
G'day, mate. I got a beard.
Yeah, let's not do that.
No. See, I warned you. I warned you.
I know, but...
And even my bloody American one was slightly crap. Anyway, open forum. Let's go to Steve the Beardy. Well, hello, you're not very beardy today.
No.
Very disappointing.
Fell off.
Very disappointing.
It was beardy yesterday. I made a mistake and now it's gone.
What was your mistake?
I was trying to shave my neck bit and level it off, and I missed, and then it gone too far, and I was like, right, fuck it, I'm going to have to shave it all off. It just looks stupid. True story.
I did that the other day when I was shaving, because I'd grown quite an impressive beard. I'd shaved it to see what it looked like with a goatee, and then I decided to see what it looked like with a handlebar. And then I decided to see what I looked like with moustache. And then I went for the Hitler.
Yes.
Because everyone has to do
You've
that.
You've got to.
And you know what? If I could be a good Hitler. Like, I moved my hair across.
Like full character.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was quite impressive, actually.
And then your mum walked in as you were doing hate speeches.
My mum and her four Jewish friends walked in.
You've done your landing strip as well to match. Yeah.
Like a complete line off your body.
My mum, her Jewish friend, her gay friend, her black friend, and her ultra British friend all walked in.
So it's like the start of a bad joke. Steve, what's your
It's the end of one.
I watched a film a couple of weeks back called American Movie. I don't know if you guys are aware
I've
of it.
I've seen a few of them.
Okay.
large industry, I believe.
Yeah, it's a 1999 documentary basically following this guy called Mark Borchardt. I don't know if that's how you say his name, but he's an indie filmmaker, and he's basically trying to make this film called Coven, this horror film, and this is his vision. You know, this guy, they interview his parents, and he's been trying to make this film for forever. And it's filmed over 2 years, 1995 to 1997. That's the little backstory bit. But watching that, and I got 10 minutes in, and I was watching it with Artie Fifkin, who's James, our illustrator, and I was wetting myself. James had seen it before, he was laughing. I said, so is this a spoof documentary? Because we've had Spinal Tap, had all those kind of things. Like, no, these are real people. I was like, wow. But he's such a fascinating man. And just watching this guy with this vision, trying to make this film, and the effort he puts in, he borrows all this money, and he gets this letter for this credit card, and he's going through these bills, and he's got so much in debt, and he goes, yes, credit card, and gets really excited. He's that. But it got me thinking, watching him film this, it took him 2 years, but he'd been working on it for four before it. It's got me thinking about how, in the last 10, 12 years, filmmaking has changed, because watching this guy make this film...
Is he a long-haired chap?
Yes.
With glasses?
Long hair.
And he's got a tubby little friend.
Yeah, his tubby little friend's basically an alcoholic, a gambler, he's in rehab.
I've seen this a very long time. I think I saw this back in the day when I lived at home with my parents, and I used to, I watched some of the best films I've ever watched just in the evening. Mm. And this was one I've always wanted to revisit again, and it was really weirdly referenced in a South Park, a Family Guy episode.
Yes,
once,
it's
yeah.
won, it's won, it won, it's won a few awards, and it's been referenced. It's one of these films that's been referenced so many times. But just it just got me thinking about making films, because nowadays we've got Kickstarter, we've got all these things, and you want to make a film, you make a decent enough trailer and pitch your story, and people will throw money at it. And this guy, they're driving around, they're putting things up for extras with his phone number in libraries and local things, and that he's borrowing money off his uncle who's basically dying and demented, and he convinces him to invest in it, and his uncle this whole time just going, this is shit, I don't agree with this. It's like, but go on. And it's just a really heartwarming, awesome story. I've actually bought the film that he made, but it's a VHS. Mm. But I wanted it. I saw this, I'm right, you can buy it on his website. Yes. Mm. Seeing the love that's been invested into this.
Isn't there a bit where there's a man, like, they're trying to break his head through a cabinet yes. wall, but it won't break, so they're actually just smashing a man's head.
Yeah. the props, they haven't cut it properly, so he's going, woman, and it's quite a sort of big guy in the sort of theatre area where they are, who's given up his time, and they are just literally smashing his head into a cupboard door. And he's like, one more take, and this guy's getting really annoyed. But it's truly fascinating, well worth a watch. So my thing is basically how filmmaking has moved on from this, and how difficult it must have been back then to get a film made as an indie filmmaker and get noticed. And nowadays you can just, it's a lot easier, it's a lot more accessible. Just an interesting...
It's just all the tools you need for independent filmmaking are readily available to everyone. Mm. Everyone's got a video camera or the ability to edit something. So it's more the practicalities of paying people or buying things. Which is, and we have a lot of cool channels like Indiegogo and Kickstarter. Mm. So it's just the fact that we're all amateur filmmakers now because we've all got access to these technologies. Were tougher to come by 20 years ago.
And even 5 years ago, when we studied on our filming course, it wasn't very easy to get a camera. I mean, the internet was around and you could do stuff, but YouTube didn't really allow for short films to be put on there because it was like a 5-minute limit or something at that point.
Yeah.
There was, and Indiegogo and Kickstarter weren't around. So it's definitely the case that the internet has changed a lot and made a lot more allowances. Yeah. And mainly for the good, you know, less for the bad. I mean, it was very hard in those days to make film.
Yeah, I mean, there's a scene where he hires all the people to cut all the film reels together and splice it, and he's just paying all these people, and they're all sat... They live in the editing thing for 3 days. Mm. It's amazing how quickly technology's evolved. That was 99, 97, 98, so...
It's amazing how things have changed. There's lots of films that show how film has developed, but is it Verbian Sound Studio is an interesting one. It's a horror movie but set in a sound studio, and I didn't overly love it, but it was interesting to see how sound design hasn't changed.
Right.
It's one area that in a lot of cases hasn't changed. Now we can do a lot more with manipulation and software and things, but a lot of movies still use Foley as a great way to create sound effects, and that is still sat at a table watching a screen, smashing vegetables, ripping cloth, treading in a tray of sand, and then you take it away and then you can do all the cool sound stuff, whereas back in the day it used to be a case of slowing it down or this, that and the other. The sound design hasn't changed, which is weird, but the way we produce film is cheaper and the way the avenues to get filming is a lot better. We see a lot with comics as well now. Comics can get produced and written.
Yeah.
And it's the age of the indie maker for a lot of things. There's more music around than ever before. And there's no excuse if you want to make a film.
Well,
you can make a film.
The question's now not if you can do it, it's how do you differentiate yourself?
Mm.
It's the internet's the perfect tool for everyone, but it's... How do you shout a bit louder than everyone else, and how do you differentiate yourself? So it's a whole new set of questions, but anyone can make anything, you know? And you've got an open distribution right there. You don't need to go cap in hand to anyone. It's just what you're going to do with it.
It's cool. But check out American Movie if you haven't seen it. Genuinely fascinating, interesting, heartwarming documentary
and
with some really interesting characters, really funny, and really just you're with him all the way. But well worth the watch. Yeah.
I finally watched Skyfall. And it's been critiqued on the podcast by Scott in particular for being overhyped, the definition of overhyping in cinema, which is probably one of the reasons I shied away from it. I'm not a diehard Bond fan, but it's something that's always been there in my life. Skyfall, just briefly, I thought was a good effort. It's nowhere near a top five in Bond terms, but it's a lot better than what we've had
That's
before.
That's exactly what I thought, but there was this whirlwind of the best Bond ever, and by extension, best film ever, and it's so fucking good! And I'm like, it's alright.
But again, we were talking about Marvel films with that kind of hype. There's this wave of hype follows films for months, and then people begin to go, it was alright. Which I'm sure, like, a couple of years ago, it was just like, yeah, it was alright. And then later you go, actually, I really like that. Whereas now it's like,
a fanfare comes along, everyone jumps on board, everyone leaves, so then everyone just, like, keeps the memory of the fanfare when it's like, has anyone actually sat down and looked at the film and gone, it's okay?
What really irritates me about that, though, is how it forces polarised opinions.
That's what I mean, I don't like that.
It's not, you can't, because then Godzilla was one, everyone's going, it's the best film ever! And other people going, it's terrible! When it wasn't. Either way, it was
how people react to the fanfare. Yeah. Some backlash and some get swept away. Whereas I'm just a big fan of divorcing yourself from all that, sitting down, coming to terms with the film, what do you think?
Yeah.
Be reasonable.
Yeah.
That's just how I view film critiquing and watching and how I prefer to do it. And it just drives me crazy when people get... Like, if it's your genuine opinion, you love it, and I don't, fine, I don't care. But there's always a wave of
fellatio, F words.
But I thought the latest film, and it's just like
it's a bit irritating, isn't it?
Yeah,
it was a very good one in terms of the sense that it's the 50th anniversary. Now it was a little on the nose with some of its references,
incredibly on the nose.
On one hand, I like them, and on the other hand, I'd like them to be in a little more subtle. And I thought it had a very chonky, to use a Steve word, third act in a house. But
Home Alone.
Other than that, the first two thirds were very good. And I kind of like the on-the-nose nod at the end, but it was too on-the-nose.
Well, put it this way. I always saw Casino Royale as a really cool reboot. It really deconstructed Bond and put him back together in a more elemental way. And then Quantum of Solace is this weird placeholder film where nothing happens, and then it returns to Skyfall where it decides to like undo all the Casino Royale and make itself more classic Bond to align with the 50th anniversary. Right. Whereas all I wanted is a bit more Bond mythos in this new style and actually create a continuity for the first time. And it just, I don't know, it just fluctuated it just too much. And the entire film's a 7, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. It's got an alright villain who's just the Joker.
Thought what he did, some of the stuff was quite good. I liked the he kind of pushes Bond's sexuality with the way he talked to him, the way he touched him. He knew how to manipulate Bond in an area Bond wouldn't be comfortable, because Bond is so macho, he always has been so macho. Yeah. For him to start not advancing, you know, don't get me wrong, it's not a... But, you know, just push him a little bit. And
so who is the villain?
It's Javier Bardem, who was...
Who's good in it?
He's very good. Okay. But I see what you mean. There was a big reference. Like,
there's nothing new in that character apart from the fact he was flirty with Bond.
Mm.
Other than that, it's borrowed from 80 million directions. And he's fine. He's about as serviceable of villain we've had in a while in a Bond franchise. Mm. I can see why people like that. But the entire film's just okay. And this is why I hate the polarising opinion, because I like it. But then it makes me have to... Almost starts like it, because everyone reacts to everything else, and I don't like being put in a position I'm harsher on the film than I want to be because people are getting carried away with it. It's like our Guardians review, we all get an A, we all loved it. Half of it was us outlining how people are getting a bit. Do you know what I mean? It was all very trepid and walking across rather than a...
Man of Steel is mine, because I like it. It's a 7 out of 10 film. But then I have to feel I have to explain to people who come up to me and say, it's terrible, it's a terrible film. And
really
I have to explain why I like it.
It's really not a terrible film.
I like it because but I'm not. They seem to think that I'm on that end of the spectrum, which is sucking it off. I'm not. Yeah, it's not. Fine. I like it. It's the best Superman film because I don't like Superman. You know.
Yeah.
And fair but enough. I'm not. But then they want me to defend it to the hilt. I'm not going to. I just think it's fine.
Yeah. What I mean, it turns into this weird tribalistic, like, you hate this, I like this, go. And it's like, every opinion's fine. I just don't like over-egged or carried away opinions. Temper yours, I'll temper mine. We'll have a nice debate or discussion. Mm. We'll walk away. Maybe you're enriched, maybe you're not. Yeah. Both fine. Don't get weirdly, like, your opinion's no more valid. Back off.
Yeah.
But what everyone's my question entirely. You don't like that film, but it's valid.
Yeah.
I like it. You're not changing my mind.
Well, what's annoying is that conversation is exactly the point. My point and conversation point from Skyfall was Bond is 50 years old. Mm. Why do you think it's a formula that would work so well? When actually, most of the films are based around chasing, as far as I can see, Bond running after people. Mm. It's a very... you wouldn't expect it to be a franchise that might have lasted 50 years, but for some reason it has, and it's got some very good and very bad examples in there.
It's people are the familiar. You know exactly what you get with a James Bond film, and there's a comfort to that. It's like a welcome return. That's why Serialization started. It's like a comforting blanket, and you just have to change the villain or the area or this or that. And that's why Casino Royale is one of my favourites, because it deconstructed it all a bit, but still gave you the same. And then, like... So I just think it's a familiarity thing. My one thing about Bond, I do like Bond a lot, but the one thing that's always irked me is a lack of continuity. It's kind of built its own pseudo-mythology in that everyone remembers a lot of the iconography and, like, characters like Goldfinger and Oddjob and Jaws and... But there's very little continuity happening in between. Like, almost every Bond... So I've had to do it myself, so I've decided every Bond actor has his own continuity.
Mm. Right, okay.
And so that explains why Jaws keeps returning with Roger Moore. And, do you know what I mean?
I'm with you, right.
So I just... But I think people just like the familiar elements and...
No, I'd agree, because I'm not the world's greatest Bond fan, but like you say, the iconography around it, I can pick out. I don't remember the Jaws scenes. I remember watching them as a kid, but it's not something I've ever felt the need to go back to. But I would agree with you definitely.
It's very identifiable.
It's that familiarity that people go, oh, another Bond film. Great, I know what I'm going to get.
He walks down. And, he walks across the barrel of the gun, shoots
the gun, does the thing.
Song.
Yeah.
Pre-credits.
Yeah. But Casino Royale. I it's probably one of them. Is the last recent one I watched, and I will say I did really enjoy it. It felt a lot darker. It felt a lot more like it took a different tone, and it did something slightly different.
I think people like Casino Royale, and it got enough pomp. But yeah, Casino Royale is the film everyone told me Skyfall was.
I don't feel
he got a horse to love Skyfall seems. Yeah.
No, that's the only one I saw recently, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. I left the last. However many before Casino Royale, and having heard that, I thought, okay, I'll give this one a go. Right, they're trying something different. It's it sounds like it's going to be a bit different from what people were selling, and it worked. Yeah, it was a 7. It was I enjoyed watching it, but
herald a new era of Bond.
And yeah, and it's sounds gone back. Yeah, it sounds like from they haven't.
They've gone back.
Which is
to
a shame.
Familiar.
But there's still, it was still much much better than a lot of Pierce Brosnan's outings, which were. The most
it's basically just GoldenEye, and Tomorrow Never Dies isn't bad. So it's not as good. Mm. And then after that, just
downhill.
Yeah, jump off.
Scott, open your forum for me. Let me see inside.
I watched a documentary that introduced me to ICW, which is a small independent wrestling company in Scotland. And they have a wrestler called Grado, who I've fallen in love with.
Okay.
And his entrance into the ring is to Madonna's Like a Prayer.
Okay.
Which might be the best wrestling entrance I've ever seen. And this has got me thinking, if we were to be a three-piece wrestling thing, or to make it more in terms you can understand, imagine we're hosting, we're doing a panel in some sort of Comic-Con, and we need some entrance music. But we're not allowed the one we use for this show. We're having a massive, extravagant entrance
right.
for this feverish panel full
okay.
of
full of people baying to see us. What are we going to do? What are we going to play?
Can I just ask, did Grado shoot first?
Came out second.
That's it.
Ah, goodbye, horses.
You want to try us?
Yes.
We're all with our junk tucked between our legs.
Just like,
and the hall empties as people run screaming.
Would you fuck me?
I'd fuck me. And then one at a time we come out. Crowd goes wild.
Putting the lipstick on.
Oh, I don't know if we can top that. I didn't expect to appear right off.
Wow.
It's a good. Well,
that's
maybe some geeky slang. And it's not just music. There's pyro. You could have.
Oh.
You could have like props.
What we'd need to? Could we burst out of?
This
we
is,
run through like some sort of giant paper thing and
it's
burst
like
out of the.
A thousand.
What would it be, a picture of?
1,000-person panel. We've got this big runway. We're having a proper entrance.
I've got it. There's a big curtain hanging down.
Right.
Okay.
It says "Weekly Geek Speak" on it. And then in say the A in speak, a little flap opens up and Steve pops through painted green and he goes, "Hello everybody. Welcome to Wiggly Geek Speak." And then we all walk out.
Is he Kermit or Yoda?
conglomerate puppet.
It's Coda.
Yermit.
Oh, it comes at the end. Steve Coda.
I would honestly, though, I'd love puppet versions of us.
That'd be amazing.
I've said this for ages. I want to do a puppet version of us.
Oh.
But
could we zip line in? We're coming on a zip line.
You can.
Yeah. We're coming, down, we're coming on a big zip line.
I want to descend on burst a sparkly moon. Bathed in light.
I imagine Steve doing a really Frozen-esque entrance.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Wind blows high in the mountain. Yeah.
With your big dress.
Footstep billowing in the wind. My fringe just flapping slightly.
So, well, let us know what you'd like us to come out to, or if you had your own theme, what would you like?
Yes.
I'd like to know theirs, but I'd also like to know what they'd give us.
Yeah.
Like what they'd deem an appropriate, cool, overly extravagant entrance.
Descending on silver moons with puppets, goodbye horses going on,
yes.
And Stephen a dress billowing
yeah.
with
yeah.
our penises tucked between our legs.
Because yeah. it's going to take some topping of that,
yeah.
which is definitely what we're doing.
Mad Max is in the building. Robbie Polanco at Robbie_Polanco, is it? Is it?
Yes.
He sent us a really nice email a while ago after we mentioned the Mad Max remake.
Yeah.
Not remake, new film.
Yeah.
With Tom Hardy, Fury Road, which is coming out next year, I believe. Mm. And he asked us if we, because we haven't done a film focus for a while,
we asked us
if we could do a film focus on Mad Max. So we did our homework, we went away and watched, some of us watched Mad Max and Mad Max 2.
Yes, I did.
Some of us just watched Mad Max, but we know enough about Mad Max to come here to the table and talk Mad Max, Mel Gibson's birthing to us before he went insane.
I'm so thankful.
So yeah, Mad Max came out in 1979, the arse end of the 70s.
Yeah.
And it's a very strange film because it came out at a strange time. Kind of before the world went mad with video nasties, it was The Changing. But this was an action movie, so it kind of has the elements of darkness, but it still feels quite 70s at the same time.
Mm.
What do you guys think of Mad Max?
I like the first one was a slow burner that I hadn't seen for years. In fact, I don't even remember watching it all the way through. It's something I knew about, so it was good to sit down and watch. It's a definite slow burner, but I like the sort of world that it creates, and I like the obviously filmed. It's filmed in Australia. You've just got the bleak outback, so it could be anywhere. It looks really cool. They don't rely on the sets and the backgrounds because there's just nothing, and you buy into the whole world that it's been the apocalypse. There's nothing because they're just driving around in these crazy cars, so I liked the
in terms of the world it's really interesting isn't it. The first one is obviously quite soon after these changes started to take place, because you've still got a kind of police force. There's a lot of people still living relatively normally, and the gangs are just sprouting up, whereas in the second one, the world has changed, and it showed the quick descent that the world went to. Anyway, we'll get into Mad Max 2 shortly. So you enjoy it. It's a slow burner.
But definitely, I mean, the world that it creates, it didn't rely on all the fancy. It didn't need like I guess a modern day version would have the CG and the stuff. Maybe I don't know. Based on the trailer, I don't think so. Mm. Sorry, but I just think it worked really well, selling you that these people were. Like you say, in the arse end of an apocalypse, just working out what was happening, who ruled who, working out a hierarchy, and it focused well on the story because it didn't need to rely on all the extra stuff. If, I can't think of a better word than stuff, but you know what I mean. So yeah, I just think it was good. It was nice to revisit.
I think I said a few weeks ago it's one I always see as a film I like, but one I never revisit. Scott, you I guess you haven't seen it for a long time either.
I thought I'd watched it before, I haven't. It's made in 1979, and it's an indie film. It's set in Australia, and it's very influenced by various exploitation films, so I do bear all that in mind. I can't stand it. I think it's awful. Like, fucking awful. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's fucking awful. I it almost pained me how awful it were to go, I've not watched this before, but I always just assumed it was this cool franchise over there that I'll get to one day and everyone likes, and it probably gets good, but I thought it was the worst thing I've watched for fucking ages.
Wow.
I couldn't have hated it more. This charming little bits, like, I like a lot of the biker gang and the ultra-violent hedonistic ways. It reminded me a lot of stuff covered in A Clockwork Orange. And it is weirdly sadistic in places. But the plot's even thinner than Pacific Rim. It's just, like, it's almost 90% car porn. And it takes 70 to 80 to 90, I lost count, minutes till the revenge plot starts. And that's the only plot it has. It's so fucking stupid. I hated it.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I know I'm a third host of the Geek Podcast, and part of me's like, I'm going to get some shit for this, and I can't be arsed for the shit. But it's fucking awful. It's really overly melodramatic. The score's so inappropriate half the time. The terrible parents as well. the three scenes with Sprog. One he's got a gun he's playing with. The other is in front seat of a car that looks like he's driving. And then they leave him alone first time there's a bit of trouble. Terrible parents.
That scene where she realises she's left him takes far too long. She's sat on the sofa having a breather. Like, I think she's going to realise in a minute. You're going to realise that. Oh, now she's realising she's running out the door. Now a child has been left in the middle of a field as there's biker gangs everywhere and the dad's run off with a gun and it's left all alone.
Yeah.
You idiot. Actually, to save you the rage, Scott, I haven't watched it for a very long time. I've watched Mad Max 2 a lot more. And Mad Max feels like it should be condensed to a 10-minute prequel to go on the start of Mad Max 2.
Okay.
So we learn, or a flashback, to remember why Mad Max is this way in Mad Max 2. I find Mad Max 2 hugely more unique, visually standalone, terrifying, different, and that's what I remember with Mad Max. I think it's massively better. It's got this silly Australian humour in it a bit more with certain characters. But it's got this. I really like the post-apocalyptic imagery, the way that people dress, how tribal it's become, how different it is. And watching the first Mad Max, I remembered it. It was slightly different, but it doesn't stand up as much as I remember. I've downgraded it from what was a 7 or an 8 to a 6. Right. I still have to like it because of what it became, I think.
I think that's what a lot of people must do, because otherwise I don't understand.
I think I mentioned it ages ago, but the scene where his wife dies and the shoe and the ball drop on the floor,
that's alright for me.
That's about all that stuck in my head, you know?
Although the image is striking, but you don't feel it.
No.
I should be torn apart by that. But it's a striking imagery, but I didn't care.
The more striking...
I think that's a failing if you don't care. It's not that sadistic.
The only thing that really... the scene that stands out for me most, which is quite terrifying, is where the bike gang chase down that red car with the man and his wife in it. And it gets really quite horrible because they smash the car up. It's... if you imagine putting yourself in that situation, it's terrifying. You know, they're only doing it because the guy drove away because he was scared, so they thought, let's chase him. Yeah. And that really shows how terrifying and heartless the gangs are, just like, as you said, in Clockwork Orange, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a lot of the good things of the film with that.
But, yeah, I'm sorry to say it didn't stand up as well with me, but I know that Mad Max 2 is hugely better.
There's no payoff, either. What's the payoff for Mad Max? The 10-minute ending when... he finally gets going, and then everyone dies in a really weird anticlimactic way, except for the last guy, which is a cool end and character moment to say he's probably gone off the deep end, but that's all the film is. And then I'm being told it's a cult classic, and it's just so just thin bare of it's like a student film. It's someone's pitch of, if you give me money, I could make I can make a film. But it's not that good. It reminded me of a student film.
That's why I think I forgive it. And I'd be very... I would push you to see Mad Max 2, just because I'm interested to see what you think.
I was going to say I definitely am, because I need to understand. And I'm trying to be forgiving, because it's 1979, it's a low-budget indie film, and he does a lot with it, and it's got its cult following, and it's got a place, and it turned into a franchise, and George Miller became an established filmmaker. So he's done something right, but for me, revisiting it now, and I'm not a Philistine, I'll watch a film from any year and tap into it instantly, because I love it. Just really disagreed with it. I just couldn't get along with it. Because a lot of it is just cars.
And shouting.
Cars and shouting.
Maybe that's why I liked it more, then, because I like Fast and Furious. Cars and shouting.
No, I don't like car porn. A lot of it is car porn.
But then the second one, trailer for Fury Road, pretty much a lot of the shots in the trailer are taken, lifted directly from 2.
Hmm.
There's a lot of imagery, like, whoa, that trailer was pretty... oh, there's that scene, that was in the trailer. And so it's obviously 2 that he's going... if he's going to reboot his franchise and he's selling this trailer at the minute, he's using 2.
I think he has to, really.
Yeah. Well, but 2 is definitely... 2 was action-packed.
It definitely sounds like this was almost George Miller's El Mariachi or Evil Dead, and then in the second one he refines the world and mythology, and everyone likes that, and they retroactively like us. It spawned this. But having... going in a bit cold, because if I have watched... the film I thought I'd watched is either something else I've forgotten, or it's Mad Max 2. That's the film I think I was going in. It just going in cold from now, it's not good or entertaining.
So to move on to Mad Max 2, Steve, you watched Mad Max 2, didn't you? Well, how did you find that one in comparison then? Where are you standing with that?
2 I preferred. It had a lot more going on. But and I forgot to look this up, and this is my own fault, so tweet in, please, if I'm getting it wrong. But what I like, I don't know whether... I mentioned it before with the trailer for the new one, that Borderlands, Borderlands 2, Fallout 3, the iconography of those sort of games, which, I mean, I loved Fallout 3 and Borderlands, amazing games. But all the iconography, when I watched 2, the poster for Fallout 3 was a man and a dog walking into a post-apocalyptic sunset. Well, that was Mad Max 2, and I'd never twigged. And there's a few of the images there that I think stood out for me because of Fallout 3 as well. Yeah. So there's a lot, it's influenced a lot of things, whether it has or hasn't. That stuck in my head. So vehicles, the characters, like you say, the way they dress, they're very... it's very...
well, when
we
talked a few weeks ago about Waterworld being Mad Max on water. But Scott, the film you saw, Waterworld isn't Mad Max on water, is it? It's Mad Max 2 on water.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And I reckon I'm definitely going to watch 2 and 3, even though I had a visceral dislike, because I know it gets better, and I know... because, you know, we're all individuals, there's a lot I don't like in the world, but I like to understand. I don't like Harry Potter, I understand why people do, which is why I watch them all. And so far I don't, unless it's a cult thing, because watching the film, it felt like a self-parody. Felt like it was taking piss out of itself.
Right.
It really did.
Okay.
So I can only assume that Mad Max 2 is worlds better, and that's the film I thought was Mad Max 1.
Did you watch 2?
I've seen 2 a lot. Yeah. It's the one I've seen over and over. I think in my mind, I kind of knew the case with Mad Max was that, and that's why I've never revisited. I think it is exactly what you said. It gave George Miller and Mel Gibson, it projected them in. Somebody saw something at that point. It may be in that time that was an exciting, different new film. Maybe it's boldness with the violence in an action film. It was an early thing to that, you know. But I think it is the case of Mad Max 2. Him being able to get funding and money and be able to experiment. Well, now, it's still, again, it's a film about road chases in a post-apocalyptic world, but the post-apocalyptic side is a lot more apparent. The cars aren't as pretty because everything's been trashed. Mm. The people aren't as pretty because they're now the day of control.
Which is what I want, because it'd be easy to watch Mad Max and not know it's supposed to be a post-apocalyptic dystopian film. Because it's only slightly inferred by what little you see. Or otherwise, I don't think it's good world building. Like you were saying, it is, because I'm like, is it? You could tell me this was set at present day, and I'd believe you.
The only thing I think it's only because I know, like, I'm seeing the police office was trashed, and the gangs were being allowed to run riot, basically. But maybe I only pick that up because I know what happens later on.
I think so. Because there's not much distinguishing it from a film set in present day.
It's got that the bit of the start where it explains sort of.
It just goes into Mad Max straight in. It's Mad Max 2 where it explains the world.
It'd be interesting to see what direction he takes it in then.
Because Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome was a bit goofy.
Third one, yeah.
Very, very goofy.
They've got Tina Turner in it.
It's got Tina Turner and children in it, you know. Right. It's a bit weird.
Okay.
But it very much from what I gather from the trailer of Fury Road, it's got the harshness back of the second one. It's a little bit horrible, a little bit but uber violent. You know it's going to be an 18. Mad Max is alone and frowning by himself. He stamps on a lizard in that very first shot in the trailer. It looks very much like how Mad Max starts at the start of Mad Max 2. He's alone. He doesn't want anyone else. He doesn't want to because he's been so hurt in the past, which is why I say if that was condensed down to a flashback to explain how Mad Max is in this second film, so reclusive, so untrusting, then 10 minutes that film condenses 10 minutes of the bike gang killing is
only 10
which
minutes.
I think they might even flash back to it in the film. I can't remember, but that pretty much, you know, when you open a book and it starts with a prologue, it's almost like that was
it's 10 minutes worth
prologue,
10 minutes worth of plot in the entire film. And I that's why after I watched it, I had a little, I hate this, because now I have to go on my geeky show and I have to slag off Mad Max for 10 minutes and I'm going to get so much shit. But I promise everyone I will watch 2 and 3 with as open a mind as possible. Because I reckon probably, if it's the film I'm imagining and think it is and have watched before, I like Mad Max 2. Because I thought I liked Mad Max. Yeah. Turns out I really don't.
Right.
So I have a lot of love for Mad Max 2. Very interested to see what you have to say, but I hugely love that one. And I think watching Mad Max has really shown how much I love Mad Max 2. It is a very rare case of where the sequel's better than the first one. So really, if you haven't seen the Mad Max, you can pretty much jump on if you want to to Mad Max 2.
I would recommend that as well, having not seen Mad Max
2. I enjoyed I enjoyed the first one. But
I can't argue Scott's points. Personally.
No, I can't argue, but I'm surprised I enjoyed it.
But this is why I find it fascinating.
Because I don't normally like slow-paced, not a lot happens films. So,
but I want to see if the plot's slow-paced, but there's 1,010,000 things happening every 2 minutes. That just none of the scenes matter.
it's character, like you said, it is character building, and it probably could have been done in 10 minutes.
Whose characters did we need building?
Him, it's just, I don't know.
Well, I don't fuck all about Mad Max other than he had a wife.
Yeah,
in it.
He had a wife in it. No, you do. I can't argue your point.
You do learn a bit about Max. You do learn he loses his wife and kid, and he becomes cold at the end. But that's about it.
Learn that in the last 20 minutes of the film. Up until when he walks in on Goose in the hospital bed, if I didn't know the name of the film, I wouldn't even thought he was the protagonist. But this is why I find it fascinating, because I talked to a couple of people before then about it, and they all agreed with me as well. But they all said the same. Yeah, but I liked it. So there's some sort of goodwill from this film. There's a charm or goodwill I'm not quite accessing. Mm. Now, is that because people have seen the second one and they're filtering it back? Or is it simply I don't like car porn as much? Or
maybe it's that, because I don't really remember the second one, so...
I don't know, but there's some... I'm trying to work it out, because I'm genuinely intrigued.
Yeah.
Because... people love Mad Max. I'm not going to change anyone's mind. I just really didn't like it.
It's fair enough.
I wanted to.
I like it less than I did going in, but I still like it for what it became, I think, to describe my feelings on it.
I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the third one, and I'm really intrigued to see where the new one goes, because bring it, yeah, if it's...
So we'll revisit this at some point when Scott has seen Mad Max 2 and 3.
Yeah. When I get the shouting...
I don't think you will.
Do you reckon?
I don't think you will. I don't think it's aged well. I do think there's a degree of what time it was made and what was happening with cinema.
That's a good point.
Because as I said at the start, cinema was changing at this point, and that was the things that happened in that film. It's about the ultra-violent, which now doesn't seem that ultra-violent. Mm. Maybe even 5 years after that point would have seemed like child's play. Mm. That's just the way the world was working then. If you think about 70s films, I mean... I watched Enter the Dragon, it's an early 70s film. It's changed so much in terms of how Kung Fu changed in that time as well. But things were changed, and changed quick is my point. In this time, things were changing. Cinema was changing. Maybe this is just one of those films which captured people at that point because of how bold it was
that's what
visually.
I'm assuming. Seriously, I'm going to watch 2 and 3. Cool, I want to get it.
Yeah.
Let us know your thoughts. What are your views? Do you disagree with anything we've said? And mad us out with your maxes.
Mm. The chain in those handcuffs is high tensile steel. It'll take you 10 minutes to hack through it with this. Now, if you're lucky, you can hack through your ankle. In 5 minutes. Go.
You're mad, man. You think I look silly, don't you?
And now we're going, for the first time in a while, to Mark for Comic Conference.
Yay. So it's time for Comic Conference. We're here with Mark at The Sword is Drawn on Twitter, and we're going to discuss all things comics like we do once a month. So, Mark, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. Hi. Cool.
So, I think the first thing you mentioned was something about a Batman title.
Indeed. Greg Capullo, he's the guy who does the artwork for Scott Snyder's Batman series, the main Batman title. We're going back to a couple of weeks ago now. It was Baltimore Comic Con over in the States, where he kind of accidentally announced that he was leaving the title in 16 issues' time.
Okay.
Yeah, and I say accidentally, because it's become very clear since then that that really wasn't intentional at all. I mean, if you'd even go back 10 years ago, this is something which probably might not have hit the press quite so quickly, but this is an internet age. So there's been a bit of a war of words between Greg and the comic news site Bleeding Cool, who reported it on the same day, pretty much an hour or two after that was announced.
Yeah.
He certainly wasn't happy to have it mentioned online. But I guess the question is, in this day and age, do we really have the right to kind of get cross about that, really? I mean, he certainly may not have intended to have announced that he was going to be leaving, but at the same point, this is a panel about... I mean, yeah, this was a panel about him. I make that clear. It wasn't specifically a Batman panel.
Right.
It was about his career in comics. Mm. But he did tell a room of punters that his contract on Batman ends after X number of issues.
Yeah.
So there are people who are going to be present at that panel who are always going to go out and leave that room and talk about it. That's basically the difference is now that they go out and talk about it online rather than with whoever they happen to be speaking to that day. The only real difference is if we were going to go back 10 years, we'd probably have to wait a month to see whether Wizard magazine covered this or something. But I think that's it's a little unfortunate, but at the same point, you know, definitely important that he stays with it. Both him and Scott Snyder have been doing that for such a while now. The two have been the pairing that has worked.
Right.
And has worked well for quite so long. So the idea that he might be going at some point. I mean, it's still entirely possible that some other negotiations happen and he agrees to sign on for longer. It's just the fact that this was the soundbite that could then be picked up upon, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. The next thing, My Chemical Romance, Gerard Way, is going to write an issue of Spider-Man.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll make it absolutely clear. This isn't for those of you who do know of his previous involvements with comics. Gerard Way did previously work as an intern at DC Comics before he was famous, so he has a bit of a backing in that. He also did a series for Dark Horse Comics, two runs of a series called The Umbrella Academy, which he did with the artist Gabriel Barr, and that actually was fairly successful, pretty well acclaimed as well. So this is certainly not an entirely new kind of thing.
Okay.
This kind of ties in with a storyline that's currently going on over at Marvel at the moment in the Spider-Man books called Spider-Verse. I don't know whether you've heard about this or not.
No.
It's an event occurring across several of the titles, things crossing into it. The idea seems to be largely centered around many, many alternate universe Spider-Men. So the publicity of this so far has kind of shown us alternate universe versions from some that we've recognized, like there was Spider-Man Noir, which was a series that Marvel did about 5 or 6 years ago, I think, now. We've seen a Spider-Woman who appears to be Gwen Stacy, having been bitten by the radioactive spider rather than Peter Parker. There's even been a glimpse of a Spider-Man wearing a partial Union Jack costume. I think the name they're going with is Spider UK.
Okay.
Now, yeah.
Inventive.
Exactly. Now, given in a tenuous fashion that Captain Britain and Spidey were briefly roommates at university back in the 70s, I don't know whether that has something to do with that, but it's all kind of alternate checks and versions of this. And they've done a series called The Edge of Spider-Verse, which is kind of tying into this and gives you glimpses of the different universe. And the final issue of that series is the one that's going to be written by Gerard Way, number 5.
Okay.
So, yes. Like I say, the Umbrella Academy was a great series. The cynic in me might possibly suggest that this is more of a publicity stunt if it's just the one issue.
Yeah.
But who knows? It might definitely be worth a look at one way or the other. So, yes, that would be Edge of Spider-Verse issue 5, which I believe is out towards the end of this month.
He's the only sort of famous-y person on board, I guess.
Obviously, he's the one that the press reports kind of jump on.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I'd be intrigued to see what happens. Miracle Man. Apparently, there's a Miracle Man annual.
Yes.
Back in the
80s. This one might seem a little bit odd. I mean, we've sort of spoken about Miracle Man a little bit before.
Yes.
Big series from the 1980s, which is currently being reprinted at Marvel after, well, I think, better part of 20 years of legal wrangling. I suppose the question would be, how does a long dormant series like that suddenly get a new annual? Is this reprinting something that we've not seen before? Is this new material? And you know, if it is going to be new material, then do we kind of have a right, or is that kind of sacrilege to add something to it? Does it dilute the original? Well, the answer is it is partially new material. Yes, there's two stories involved, it seems. Comic Book Resources were reporting on this last week. Looks like the two stories that we're looking at, one is going to be set in the 1950s, the old classic Marvel Man, as it was at the time, rather than Marvel Man. And that's going to be worked upon by the team of Pete Milligan and Mike Allred, who are probably best known for doing Ecstatics at Marvel, which was a pretty impressive series for 2 or 3 years. The other, though, is perhaps a little bit more controversial in its own strange fashion. It's going to be a Kid Marvel Man story. With art supplied by Joe Quesada, who used to be the chief creative officer at Marvel these days. He was editor-in-chief until a couple of years ago. But the main news centering around this is the writer for the story is going to be Grant Morrison. Now,
cool. Okay.
This is where the controversy kind of comes from. For those of you who've kind of followed this rather odd and certainly alleged rivalry between Grant Morrison and Alan Moore over the years, a few years ago, Grant Morrison did this interview for The Beat, online comic site, in which he mentioned that while they were both writing and submitting work to Warrior magazine, which is where Moore's version of Marvel Man first appeared, he had this idea for a Kid Miracle Man story that he wanted to pitch. But supposedly, in no uncertain terms, Alan Moore warned him off it, or at least that's Grant Morrison's take on it. And yes, that is this story.
Okay.
And it's come about because Joe Quesada at the time read that interview and so approached Grant Morrison to see whether he'd be willing to write it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Like I say, you always take this more Morrison rivalry with a pretty liberal pinch of salt, to be honest. But I don't suppose Marvel are going to be that worried about angering Alan Moore by publishing this anyway. After all, he has kind of insisted to have his name taken off the reprints, so there's probably not that much of an issue. But if you are the kind of person who seems to jump at every twist and turn of this slightly bizarre saga, then you're probably going to want to pick that one up.
Okay. Any news on when it's out, or is it just a...
That won't be out, I think it's December time. So, oh, yes, okay. Right towards the end of the year.
So due towards the end of the year. And I believe you got some more on Alan Moore.
Yeah, I suppose in a kind of associated area. Yeah. Yes. In the meantime, some of you might be wondering what he's kind of been up to. Back in 2006, I think it was, there was the announcement that he was going to write a second prose novel, which was tentatively called Jerusalem. Right. And it was announced this year in several different places that he's finally finished the first draft of that book. The Northampton News out there to The Guardian have been reporting that, yes, first draft of new book, Alan Moore writes 1 million word count book.
Wow.
1 million.
Okay.
So is the story. Well, the update from this side of the weekend is that might have been a slight exaggeration. But
you'd hope so. And well.
Yes. There is a draft, and yeah, supposedly it's closer to 600,000 words, which is still a fairly sizable amount, but definitely. Yes, probably not quite as dramatic a title as 600,000 compared to 1 million.
No.
So to go by way of how it's been described... to give a quote from, I think, from Comic Book Resources I picked up, Jerusalem explores the history of Alan Moore's hometown, Northampton, England, using stories from his family's past with his own interpretations of events and fantasy elements that detour into other dimensions and into other genres.
Wow.
So, light summer reading there.
Yeah.
it is Alan Moore. You kind of have a certain expectation behind how heavy that may be, but there's usually a decent standard behind it after all.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Blimey. We've spoken about it ourselves, but we thought, obviously, you're the comics man. We thought we'd ask you, the Spider-Woman, should I say, sorry, comic cover that's caused a bit of controversy recently.
This would be the Mino Manara one.
Yes.
Yes.
Just get your thoughts on that, or what your interpretation of it is, please.
Well, I don't think... I saw somebody actually who mocked up this. There was an image I saw on Tumblr who tried to reproduce the comic book cover itself as a three-dimensional image. And unless Spider-Woman has gone under some dramatic reshaping of her spine and entire physicality, it's just not a possible position that she could actually be standing in.
Right.
Mino Manara has done... I believe he's a European artist. He's done a lot of... shall I say, semi-clothed stories. I mean, they've always been very tastefully done at their root, but it's an alternate cover.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I would hope that the interior of the book, and I fully expect the interior of the book to be a lot more respectful than that, but obviously you want to, this time round, as with any new release of a comic, you want to put out as many different covers as you can, because that way you get more people buying them and collecting them.
Yeah.
And this is one of those. It's a strange pose. Is it the most offensive pose in the world? Probably not. It's still not ideal for what it is, though, all the same.
Yeah, touche. And have you been watching Doctor Who?
I certainly question. Have,
yeah. Peter Capaldi. Do you think he's shaping up? What do you think to the episode so far?
I actually think the episode from this last Saturday is probably the strongest of the bunch so far.
But okay.
I'm finding it very interesting, actually. I think, certainly in my own opinion, as things had kind of continued through Matt Smith's time doing the Doctor, we'd kind of got into a little bit of a rut. We'd kind of known what we were really going to expect and receive to a certain degree. And I think that the series really did need something to kind of shake it up and give it something different this time around. I think Peter Capaldi absolutely delivers that. He's not an instantly likable character, maybe. But at the same point, he kind of delivers this wonderful feeling of a slightly broken version of the Doctor, who's not really entirely certain of himself, who he is, as to whether he's a good guy, whether he's a bad guy, where his allegiances lie there. He doesn't really know himself very well. And I think as we kind of continue with the series, slowly but surely, he'll get to some kind of point where he perhaps recognizes that a bit more, is a little more certain of himself. But in the meantime, getting that kind of story of discovering himself. And it can be actually really quite dark in a very, very enjoyable way. But yes, I think that's probably where we're going to go. It's definitely a welcome change.
I've not seen the Dalek episode, but how did you find that one? That split people.
I don't think it was a fantastic episode all in. It wasn't a bad episode. Definitely not. I think it's tricky because we have had this kind of cycle since we've gone from David Tennant flying into Matt Smith had a very definite tone to the series. It was much more light. It was much more easygoing.
Yes.
And we've reached this point now where we've gone for something which is completely different. And you know what people are like. When you've been getting used to something for a good kind of 5 or 6 years and somebody throws you something which is claiming to be the same thing but totally different, you're immediately going to go up against it and go, no, that's not what I want because it's not what I expected. Yeah. But I think if people actually stick with this for a while, I think it's going to work out really, very well.
It does sound good. I've only seen the first one, but it sounds like this, because like you said, with The Last Doctor, with Matt Smith, the sexual tension that we were getting was building and building through the different Doctors and series until it was like, oh, come on, really?
Whereas this time around, every opportunity to do down the assistant at any point absolutely is taken.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's gone back to the old Doctor. Doctor Who sort of style.
Well, you can't just keep on carrying around that. I mean, he as is made very kind of clear on two or three occasions, he is not her boyfriend.
Yeah.
As simple as that.
Anything else you'd like to bring to us?
We usually pass somebody on as a kind of a follow Friday for Twitter, don't we?
Yeah.
If you're not already doing so, a good guy who would be worth following on Twitter is a guy by the name of Tom Brevoort. Now, he holds two titles over at Marvel Comics at the moment. He was made executive editor at some point, but these days I believe the title is Senior Vice President of Publishing.
Okay.
He started in editing. He still does that. But he also maintains a Tumblr page called the Marvel Age of Comics, which is kind of tied into his Twitter feed. And he posts images from the 50s through to the 80s, all Marvel back catalogue, classic artists showing bits and pieces of covers, concepts and sketches all the way along. Kind of artwork. If you're into that kind of Marvel, you know, comics drawn the Marvel way vibe, you'll get that from that site.
Cool.
So yes, if you aren't already following him, that's at Tom Brevoort. That's TOMBREVOORT. Classic Marvel stuff.
Brilliant. Well, check him out. Thank you very much indeed. And do you want to tell new listeners, please, where we can find
more of my stuff? Yes. You can find me at a site called It Came From Darkmoor, which is a Marvel UK comics blog. Which I've been running for a few years now. You'll find me at It Came From Darkmoor. That's itcamefromdarkmoor.blogspot.com. Or search for It Came From Darkmoor because you will find that infinitely more quickly. These days, Google being connected with Blogger as it is anyway, they own the same company. You'll find it fairly quickly and easy through that.
Fantastic. And Mark is at The Sword Is Drawn on Twitter. So thank you very much, Mark. It's been lovely.
Okay, no problem.
Steve wants to play a little game.
Do you want to play a game?
Do you want to play a game? There's a hashtag doing the rounds on Twitter at the minute, and it's something like describe a guess a film from a bad plot description, words to that effect. And I thought I was going to bring some of those, but I've not had time to look into it. However, there is an account that I've been following for a while that somebody set up on Twitter, Amazon Movie at AMZN Movie Reviews. And it's basically one-star Amazon Movie Reviews. They always make me chuckle. They're just a bit silly. And I thought, give it a go and see how this goes.
Are these the ones that are bad,
but
for good films and things?
Yes. Yeah. Like, so we've got
ones when there's a picture of the poster and then they put the review on the top as you would like a critic.
Yeah.
Because I follow him as well.
It's similar. Yeah, they've lifted lines from that for the posters, but these are the full reviews. And I thought, see how this goes. We'll just scroll through the Twitter account, read them out. Some are obvious, some are like, I would never, what the fuck? I'll start with this one because this is weird. The movie has bad subliminal messages throughout the whole movie. Basically, the movie is trying to dream people into being terrorists and then telling them to go and commit suicide. Go ahead, don't post this review. I know you won't because it's too negative, but remember this. Woe to the man that stands in the way of Jesus. Worst underlying theme I've ever seen. So there it's a film with an underlying
theme. V for Vendetta?
Is it Edge of Tomorrow?
No. So it's an underlying theme. It's saying it's saying going to commit suicide. It's a negative film. It's subliminal. So it's a film with a bit of a twist. It's Fight Club.
Of course.
One really bizarre review of Fight Club.
You know what?
I got so stuck on the review there that I couldn't even think the obvious.
It's like but it's basically it's trying to dream people.
So say it again.
Basically, the movie is trying to dream people into being terrorists and then telling them to commit suicide.
I'm just trying to link the review to it. Like, I guess in a very warped sense, that kind of. I don't sure about terrorism. Although they.
Yeah.
Well,
I get it.
Become a terrorist faction, don't they?
I see it. I don't agree with it, but yeah.
No, it's a weird one. It was not what I expected. I was trying to teach my juniors about the complications of a labyrinth, and it didn't do what I wanted. One star.
Labyrinth.
Yeah. What the fuck?
So did he want a film, or he or she want a film where someone walked around going, this is a maze and it's really difficult to get around?
Sometimes you get lost.
Mazes amaze me.
I wish that I'd been able to see a trailer before I purchased this item. This was a total yawn. I purchased it for my granddaughters, 10 and 14, on the basis of being mentioned at the awards. The snowman looks like a phallus. Waste of money.
Is that frozen?
Yes.
Does he look like a phallus?
What? Can I imagine a dad sat
there? Well, somebody who's not
like
got
a penis.
Somebody who's not got access to anything to watch trailers on. For a start, I wish there was a trailer for this film before I bought it.
I think it's more what palaces has she seen?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. He or she.
I think that's fucked up. Because it's not even vaguely.
Husband's nubbish kind of carrot top penis.
Yeah.
Even if she's just referred to the carrot, it's wrong. Because the carrot's misshapen.
Yeah. A little bit bizarre. poorly directed movie. I thought this movie was about disco, but it was all about the porn business. Come on, you got to be kidding. Good actors and actresses, but after a while I got sick of it and returned it. When a better movie comes along, call me.
Well, Boogie Nights.
Yes.
That's what I said.
Okay.
Well, geez, this is
whatever
a...
I can.
I love the assumptions people have of what a film is going to be before they even watch it. I want this film to be this. Oh, it isn't. I'm angry.
Damn it, one star.
What was that? We did a story about a year ago, and it was someone trying to sue a cinema for being missold a ticket.
For Drive. They thought it was going to be a...
Fast and Furious.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it?
People are mad.
Harry Potter is such a wiener. If he wasn't so talented, he wouldn't have a girlfriend. I give this movie 1 out of a possible 5. I wouldn't give him any stars, but he's so damn talented.
Oh, is it that What If that was in there?
Sorcerer's Stone, apparently. The fuck?
Oh, Harry Potter.
That's not a review.
No.
That's an insane...
weird.
I think people do it.
I think they do.
Some must. Although, at the same time, people are idiots.
Oh, people are incredibly stupid. But sometimes I just can't believe...
No, some of them are a bit like...
Sometimes it's like, I can't buy this person could type and have that. Like, well, one of them is false, and it must be the opinion.
It's got to be that. The 80s were bad. Wow, films have come a long way. Special effects and quality acting weren't invented yet, but it's still a classic.
I think that is stupid.
I know. Arnie film.
Predator.
Nope.
Running Man.
Nope.
Total Recall.
No.
Terminator.
Yes.
Terminator, apparently.
So movies are really bad.
This is a classic. Special effects are rubbish, but it's a classic. Okay.
Well, yes, times change.
Really?
I really didn't think anyone would ever judge Terminator that harshly.
Well, they have considerations for the limitations of a certain time period. I don't expect stating that CGI in 1980.
There'll be someone attacking me for having an opinion on Mad Max, and then Terminator's a good film.
Yeah, it is. Wow, this movie made how much? What a horrible movie. Scarlett Johansson isn't even that good looking, and how come the Hulk's pants grow when he grows?
People are obsessed with Hulk's trousers, aren't they?
They are. Good old Avengers.
And I like that as well. I don't find them attractive, so it's a bad film.
It's like Steve with his V for Vendetta review.
I had a hangover.
I had a headache.
I felt ill.
2 out of 10.
Got any more for us?
Is this just a remake of the 80s movie Short Circuit? Shame on you, Disney.
Wally!
Yay!
I've always thought that. It's very similar to Johnny Five.
Johnny Five, Five's son.
Johnny Five is alive!
Johnny Five! It was a blood fest. I watched it to see who was the bad guy, not for children.
Okay. Hunger Games?
No. You're next, apparently. Oh!
Not for children. There's no children in it. What?
Scott, did you write this one? Poor cars. Cars driving on the wrong side of the road. Dated. Poor sound. Low budget. Don't waste your time.
Sounds like Mad Max.
Yay!
Although, no, this won't be funny, though. I disagree, actually. I disagree. It's subjective which side it rode. They're in Australia where that's the rules.
Yeah.
And, I have no issue with that.
I regret taking my child to see this horrible movie. It's full of gratuitous violence. There is a Mafia Don character in the form of a crippled up bear. The toys gamble, imprison and mistreat others. And in general, it's far too violent and emotional for any children. It should be rated R.
Toy Story 3.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
It's horrible.
It's Schindler's Toy Box. I've said it a
million times.
They nailed it all though, really. It is quite dark. Maybe not R, right? But, you know, there's an evil bear who...
If I had kids, I wouldn't let them watch it till they were 21.
Hmm.
And then I said you'd be allowed to talk to a therapist afterwards.
Yeah, wise words.
Because
yeah.
I'm a responsible parent in the making.
But they can watch Predator.
Oh yeah, there's no wrong with Predator.
If you like made-up stories, then this one is for you. Fiction portrayed as truth is not the truth that is required for illegitimate decisions.
Every film ever.
Yeah. Apparently, it's Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
Last one, because this just weirded me out. Filmed in French, subtitled in English. Just be aware. This is the one that started the idea.
Warning, people! Warning! Warning!
You have to read.
This is the one that inspired me to look through them and think this might be a section. I didn't realise that this was a movie that was filmed in French. I was using it as my background noise.
Filmed in French? It's a French movie.
As I was exercising, I couldn't focus on it to read the subtitles. It may be a good movie, but I didn't have the time nor the desire to read what it was saying, and I found it difficult to follow the plot, as I would miss lots of the subtitles.
I feel like I want to come and write a review.
Yeah, no.
French film, we've discussed it, we love it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That reminds me of when The Artist was out. Everyone in the cinema was told to warn people because it has a different format ratio.
Right.
Because, to make it more sort of...
Feel like an old film.
It's got a different aspect ratio.
Yeah.
So they felt like they should explain it to people who might claim it doesn't fill the screen. Right. That it's intentional by the filmmaker.
Yeah.
I knew that because I worked in a cinema. So I went to see The Artist with my grandma, and then five different people, from going in to going into the film, warned us that it was a black and white film.
Shocking.
Right.
Do you know it's a black and white film? Not that it was a silent film, which I might understand, although that's still stupid.
Yeah.
Not the aspect ratio, which is the one thing they were supposed to. The fact it was black and white, was that fine? Like, must ask us because we clearly aren't aware or else we won't be seeing it.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Society disgraces
me. It's maddening.
I still haven't seen The Artist. Is it good?
Oh, it's brilliant. It's very charming.
Yeah.
It's a charming love letter to silent films. And it's very watchable.
It's very good,
actually. One you can watch while exercising because you don't miss the subtitles.
Yeah. Well, it has subtitles.
Oh, yeah,
well.
Of course it does.
Because it's silent.
It's
a silent film. So don't exercise.
So no, don't exercise and watch it. Okay. I'll note that one down.
Watch Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
That's our recommendation for exercising or not paying attention. And still wanting to write a review.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing those.
That's alright, I thought it might be a...
People, if you find any ridiculously bad ones that you feel you want to share with us, do send them at Weekly Geek Speak. It's the end of the show.
Aww.
It's that time again. Scott, I was in a horrific high-speed car accident because Mel Gibson heard about the bad comments he said in this podcast and chased him down. It's weird because Scott doesn't drive. So it's just me and Steve for the outro. I hope you get better, Scott.
Yeah, get well soon.
Okay, yeah, it's the end of the show. Before we go on to our shout-outs, though, I just wanted to have a word with you.
With me?
With you.
Oh.
You went to 2.8 hours later.
I did indeed.
2.8 hours later. Well, you can tell the listeners. What is it?
It's basically you turn up and it's like the zombie apocalypse has happened. That's the simplest way of describing it.
They corner off a part of the city,
they cornered off a huge area of Sheffield, registered us all, provided us with a map, went in, and the room had been decorated out like a big survivor's camp, and you were greeted by these people who were all in character, and scientists doing tests to make sure people in the queues weren't zombies, to keep you entertained. And then you went in and you got given, in your small group, you got given a rucksack, and the aim was to get a bottle of water from the city and return back to the camp uncontaminated. An absolutely amazing, slightly terrifying, high-energy, adrenaline-filled evening. I don't want to give too much away because we went in, I didn't know much about it, but it's just great. You hack these computer terminals that tell you your next location on the map, and then you've got to find that and go to the setting and split into different zones, and you just get the zombies come running after you, and the noises are terrifying because obviously there's some sections where it's pitch black. You have to take torches, but you don't want to put the torches on because you don't want to attract the zombies. Yeah. It was genuinely like amazing, and you can just hear like the well, God, where did that come from? And you stood there like, everyone freeze, shh, don't make a noise, and then suddenly you hear it getting nearer, and it was amazing.
Are they running zombies?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
I guess that's allowed because it is cured 2.8 hours later, so I'll make allowances.
They do run. You see, they run fast.
Because I was reluctant to go because it was, what, 30-odd quid?
Yeah, it's 33.
And I just had this horrible image of people in Halloween costumes going, I'm a zombie!
No.
But no, everything I've heard from it. And actually, I'm kind of sad I didn't go, but at the same time, with the chance that it might have been crap, I like to test the water and these things. So, as it hasn't, it sounds like something that would be very much up my street.
Yeah, we were chatting to one of the guys, and I think they said they run them quite often in Manchester, so we're tempted to go again, different city. And they did one, I believe, in Edinburgh, I think he said, and the guy was saying that the Sheffield-based one was loads better.
Mm.
It just worked, the location was better. I mean, for those that know Sheffield, local listeners, Attercliffe. It's quite a rundown,
old industrial part of
Sheffield with a canal in it. So there's lots of very dark alleyways and weird buildings that we were allowed access.
Bad enough just walking around at night, as it is in that area. So,
but it's just the effort they've gone to, like I said, to get the abandoned buildings opened and use them for things, and genuinely, like, they must have taken the organisation.
Yeah,
hats off to the people that do it, because it did a fucking amazing job.
Mm.
But it's still coming to cities, and they do run it in Manchester, but Google it and check it out, and if you get a chance to go, highly recommend it. We wanted to do it again the next day. but managed to survive, so.
Yeah, good stuff.
Was good.
But
good
you fun. Did get blood on your face.
I got blood on my face because you got to the end and they said survivors go through and infected get made up, and I was like, I want makeup.
Yeah.
So
no, I won't be completely understand that.
I totally got the makeup anyway.
Should have been either way around.
Yeah, exactly.
You survived. You can have some fun. You guys fuck off.
Yeah. If you're wondering how you get caught, the zombies catch you and tag you, and you have to stand still, and they have different degrees of UV marker, and they draw a UV
Is
thing
Is that
on your
kind
arm.
Of bizarre? Like, then you've been chased, and then all of a sudden one starts going, sorry, I can't. Yeah, it's a little marker.
Oh, they're fully in character when they do it.
Mm.
You stop, and they go, right up in your face and draw on you. One of our friends got
Again,
and they said they were properly...
Can you imagine watching Dawn of the Dead and then it grabs him and they just scribble on you with marker pen? But then, obviously, you can't. Did anyone just get too into it and just start beating one to death?
No, but no. I think we were lucky because we had the last... Well, not lucky, but we had the last one of the day and it was pitch black. But the zombies weren't as fast, I don't think, because quite a few people when we got back had been caught. I think they were slow. It had been a long day.
It's good to do it like proper in the dark, though, I suppose, the last one of the day.
I've seen some photographs of people that went in the day and it looked good, but I think there was a bit with a field where hindsight, they didn't come out, but God, the noises and the grass rustling and the screaming was petrifying. Yeah, but it's amazing experience.
It kind of ties into what we were talking about a few weeks about, movies being turned into a ride.
Yes,
kind of is taking that to an nth degree, making it an experience.
Definitely.
And it makes me want to ask you and you for next week, really, and the listeners, what movies would you like, scenes in movies that are totally terrifying, would you love to experience? Oh, but yeah, let us know what you think. Which brings us nicely on to Stephen, what time is it?
It's time for This Week The Geeks Have Spoken. Thanks as always for your interactions, reviews, feedback and other such random shout-outs. Start as we always do with three-word reviews. And Pete Buschbauer, the king of three-word reviews. Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol. Cruise Kicks Ass, 8 out of 10.
I've seen the first two Mission Impossible, and that was moons ago.
I've heard good things about the four, so that's good to hear. And then this will be one for HRM as well. Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, Kat Dennings' Finest, 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10, I hate that film. Sorry.
I wasn't a fan, sorry. Freya Gillard, at Run Roller Run, Speed Racer, so much colour! 7.5 out of 10.
Quite high rating for that.
Yeah.
I've only heard negative things, but yeah, it certainly does look like a explosion in a sweet factory.
Is that the one that was fully CGI, pretty much?
Yeah,
quite a few years ago.
Yes, yeah, about 2005, I want to say. But yeah, real over the top.
Okay.
Flopped in the cinema,
I remember that happening. At Hollisby, The Zero Theorem, Not Good Gilliam, 4 out of 10.
I've heard this. Yeah. But as I said before, Gilliam either knocks it out of the park or just flounders around, and to be honest, he rarely knocks it out of the park for me.
Fair enough.
Although I did see Fisher King the other day, and it's actually very good. You know, I was saying a few weeks ago, I was going to watch it in the wake of Robin Williams' death.
Yes,
several have recommended it. As soon as I saw Terry Gilliam's name, I didn't watch it, which is bad, but I actually did sit down and watch it, and it is definitely up there as one of my favourite ones of his films.
Okay. Yeah,
so worth a watch.
Cool. We got a new picture of the Batmobile that landed and asked you what your favourite Batmobile was. At The Dog Never Dies, the Dog Never Dies podcast, give that a listen. They said, I have a guilty fondness for the Dayglow over-the-top Batmobile from Batman Forever.
Yeah, I mean, I liked those longboat ones, that's what I call them, you know. Yeah. Long, flat, impractical. Because mine is Batman 89, Batman Returns. Those two are my childhood Batmobiles.
Yeah.
I never have been a fan of the Tumbler at all.
No.
I don't begrudge the film for it. I just don't feel like it's a Batmobile personally. But everything with the Batman is different takes, different views, different ways of doing stuff. So you've got to be forgiving.
Definitely. Man of many names, man of mystery, at Sparky Wright. What's all that smoke? Call the bat mechanic.
It looks rather smoky. Have you seen the picture?
Yeah.
What do you make of it?
Very bulky.
It looks like very hybrid-y. It looks like the Tumbler stretched out a bit.
It's like a mashup of
the 89
things that
one
we've seen so far. Yeah, overly taken by it.
Yeah, it makes me worry that I hope that they're just not trying to please all audience with a bit of everything. Mm. They should just do it by themselves. They might still. I can't judge a film by its Batmobile.
No. At good_podcast said, the new one looks a mess. I'll take the 89 Batmobile, please.
I do completely agree with that on both points, yeah.
And at Popular Outcasts, I like the new one. I love the Tumbler from the Nolan trilogy and the Batman Returns 1992 Batmobile.
Again, I like the 92 one. On Facebook, in regards to the Batmobile, what's your favourite incarnation of Batmobile? Moblo Movie Review says, I like them all except the one in the last trilogy. It was the incarnate of horrible, overzealous Michael Bay wannabe crap. I think that's the Tumbler.
Wow. Okay.
Do you have a favourite one?
Yeah, well, I was going to... Yeah, at Hollowspy said Adam West one for sure. Retro Heaven. The Adam West one is my classic. I remember having the toy as a kid.
Yeah.
It's just the wings and just the really iconic looking front. You can't miss... That's not... Could that be a tank? Could that be a Batmobile? Mm. That's a Batmobile. It looks like it's got the wings and the... I genuinely like that. We then asked you your... Well, we spoke about it. The best movie scene with a train. At Technically Ron, yeah, snakes on a motherfucking train. At Technically Ron, Back to the Future 3, obviously.
Yeah, Scott pointing that one out. Yeah. It has to come top of the list, doesn't it?
Baromir the Bear, aside from Under Siege 2, the fight scene between Bond and Grant in From Russia with Love.
Yeah, this kind of spurred off another conversation altogether, actually. Mm. And I don't know if I did mention it earlier in the show or not, but in Skyfall, probably the most famous scene from Skyfall is jumping all around on a train.
Right.
With a digger on the train. It's mental. But he went on to say, does every Bond have a train fight?
Yes, I believe, yeah.
And somebody else, I can't remember who, pointed out Roger Moore's.
Yes, they did.
Brosnan had one in GoldenEye. Who was it who pointed them out? I think it was Bert.
It was Baromir the Bear, Baromir the Bear. Jen at Two Pink Peonies said Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade and just put a little emoticon of a snake.
Yeah.
That was quite cool. Michael Saborin at The Flickist, the beginning of Skyfall and Strangers on a Train come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mean Streets Pod at Mean STS OTR Pod. The fight between Bond and Jaws on the train in The Spy Who Loved Me is pretty strong.
Thank you, Mean Streets.
So thank you for that.
Bond has a lot of train fighting then, it
apparently
seems.
So, yeah.
Place to be to have a fight.
Definitely. Overly dramatic. I wonder if we've ever done that on Mythbusters. Can you have a fight on a train?
It happens a lot in westerns as well. Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
they'd always end up on the top.
How, I think it must be dependent on how fast the train is going.
Yeah.
Because surely once you get to a certain velocity, you're just going to get whipped off the back of it.
Definitely. And there's always the really cool missions in GTA where you have to run along the top of a train and do things as well. Richard Lawrence at Bill Owl. Thanks to Weekly Geek Speak, I've been thinking about trains all day. There's some great train-based films.
Also, if you can think of a train scene with Timothy Dalton's Bond, I bet there isn't. He only had two movies, but it'd be cool if they did. And who was it? George Lazenby.
Yes.
He only had one film. I bet he doesn't either. But
no. Well, let us know.
Name your best scenes in a movie with hats.
Yes, hats.
We're going to have a think for next week. You have a think, and we'll get our hat on next week.
Yeah.
Continue this weird theme.
Yes. Doctor Who aired, and you tweeted your views. At Hollow Spy, much, much better writing, possible plot holes or debate parts, but decent time story and no shitty joke attempts. That makes me happy. Quite fancy watching it.
I watched it.
Any good?
Well, actually, I haven't watched any of this new Doctor Who series. You know my views on Doctor Who. I'm not a big fan of... I like the concept, I like the premise, I hate doctors running around being wacky, really puts me off. Yeah. So much so I hardly watch Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Watched the 50th episode, so that was very good and I enjoyed that. But everyone's been saying over the past few weeks that either Capaldi's terrible or Capaldi's brilliant, but the one thing that's been consistent is the episodes have been a bit naff.
Mm.
I heard, actually listening to ABH podcast, they were talking about it, and they brought up that it was a good episode, it was creepy, and that's the kind of Doctor Who I'm more into.
Mm.
And I watched it today, actually, and it was a very good episode. It was sensible, it took itself seriously, it had a very good question that was poised at the start. And it experimented with an interesting side. And I liked the way it looped around in the end as well. It was clever. Cool. It was well written. And also did have a little nod to the wider universe too. So it's worth a watch.
Yeah.
And
okay.
It shows that Doctor Who can do it right. It doesn't have to be Goofy running around dressed as Robin Hood with a dinosaur chasing it.
Yeah.
With a flower stuck up its arse. I was very impressed with Capaldi.
Mm.
He seems a lot more like... he really feels like a guy who has not had much human contact for a long time.
Right.
He's very like, And then when he doesn't get his way, he gets angry, you know, he'll shout and things. And But at the same time, I find him quite likeable. I'm glad there isn't this love thing going on.
Scott at Scotty Magic tweeted in about Doctor Who, best of the season by a country mile. Nice creep factor, good story and interesting developments.
Completely agree, yeah.
I'm only hearing positive things, and from what Mark said as well, I might have to go home and watch it. Monday Face at Sparky Wright.
Man of many names this week.
Yeah. Is with T and is available for modelling work at mates rates.
Yes, the weekly t-shirts we sold out. Christ.
Available
and then
now.
We said,
oh, not available now.
Not available now. But yeah, if you want to let us know, we've already pretty much got another order ready to send off. So drop us an email, weeklygeekspeak@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. So tell us that you want one, tell us your size, and we'll get them ordered in.
At ABH Pod, great episode this week. Thanks for the free funny. Thank you kindly. Simon Robertson, at Say Yeah Flash, in response to episode 69 and the weird sex list that we spoke about, said, for some reason, I have 40 plus films that involve incest in its many forms. Fuck knows what that says about my subconscious.
Yeah, I didn't know there were that many about incest. I mean, I'm trying to think of incest films
now. I know.
I've got quite a few necrophilia films, actually, but I'm a horror fan. Like macabre and things, not like...
Yeah.
Like in Black Market. So. But yeah, let us know your favourite incest film.
Yes.
Lone Star's a good one.
Oh, okay.
I think I might just give him the twist away in the film. Though.
Oh.
Oh, well.
Spoilers!
It was from ages ago, don't worry.
Popular Outcasts, thanks for the news correction. I realised once I'd said it about 10 minutes later, I was annoyed, so thank you for bringing it up. The actor playing Captain Cold is Wentworth Miller. His character name in Prison Break was Michael Scofield. Thank you. that was my balls up. And superhero shows, we've got a lot coming our way. We're about to be bombarded with them.
There's a lot.
So what are you looking forward to? Bex at Arbitrary Genius said, Constantine, if it's decent and gets viewers, people will finally recognise my Hellblazer tattoo.
Hey.
I thought that was quite cool.
For Moblo Movie Reviews again said, I think the Gotham show is an interesting idea. Not going to watch it because I'm anti-Batman at the moment, but it still looks interesting though. Not sure they got the right guy for Flash. Did I hear something about a Supergirl TV series? Yes, there is a Supergirl TV series. And strange, you're anti-Batman. I could never be anti-Batman. And you'll have to talk to Scott about Flash. Michael Saborin, he's looking forward to Gotham. Simply puts Gotham, Batman. You know.
Fair enough.
Richard Lawrence says, Gotham, because they have made some interesting character inclusions that I don't think will work. For example, I also think that one of the most interesting things about the Bat is his actions give birth to some of the best villains, exactly what we were saying.
Yeah.
And with Gotham, most appeal already to have been cast. Yeah, so, Batman creates the villains, is what I'm saying. Why I don't like the idea of shows is Batman creates the villains in a weird way. And Mark Ride says he's looking forward to Trowel Man. So there we are. That's Facebook has spoken.
Coming soon. Thank you, Facebook. That's it. Thank you for all your interactions, as always. Tweet us at Weekly Geek Speak.
Just wanted to shout out to Star Toys, who we met at Sheffield Film and Comic Con. They do toy news frequently on their YouTube channel. Just search Star to Star Toys on Facebook or on YouTube. And thank you, they gave us a shout out as well. Also, there's some really cool toys coming out. I hadn't realised. Like a 3-foot-long DeLorean.
Wow.
It's about 600 bob, but still... worth it if you ask me.
Fit on your mantelpiece.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So please do get in touch. We're on Twitter at Weekly Geek Speak and
Facebook.
Weekly Geek Speak. And if you do want to email us, you have something more big to say, you can email us weeklygeekspeak@gmail.com. Before we go, there's some more housework to do. We have to announce our competition winner.
Yay!
Our competition is for a keyring. That's the word. Key a Lego keyring, which lights up. It is Darth Vader. A couple of Reckless Hero at Reckless Hero HQ. There's a couple of their stickers. At Geeky Comics, Geeky_comics, sorry, they gave us a couple of comics from Victor Wright.
Yep.
First ones in the series. See if you can enjoy those. I've read one of them, actually. It's really good.
Cool.
What's it called? It's called Teal, The Extinction of All Living Things.
Okay.
Looks really good. And Zombie Bears as well, from Jeremy Biggs. He's first three issues of that, and also a Weekly Geek Speak t-shirt. So a really cool prize with everything from Sheffield Film and Comic Con. Thank you so much to everyone who retweeted and got us out there. I'm going to press the wheel now.
Oh, here we go.
Spinning,
slowing down.
At Y2 Stump, Paul Sweat, please do get in touch. Email us weeklygeekspeak@gmail.com. You have won.
You're a winner.
Woo! I wish I was a winner.
You're a winner.
I think that might be it. It's not.
What?
Thank you so much to our bloggers this week at Popular Outcast. Sent more 3-word reviews because he is the king.
Oh, yes.
Scotty Magic, our host, who is horribly banged up in hospital.
Yeah.
All Mel Gibson's fault.
Damn you, Mel.
Thank you for your blog, updating us on all the latest superhero developments. And thank you to @minifigsme, who sent us their press release for their really awesome, brilliant new horror figure line.
Definitely.
Brand new. They did one last year for Halloween. They've got a new set out now, including Pincushion, which might be based on Pinhead. there's all kinds. Have a check out on our website. We'll be tweeting the links through the week. And finally, a follow Friday of the week goes to @AuralNauts, who are a YouTube channel.
Cool.
Leave some really funny stuff. We tweeted up Freestyle Bane and the Star Wars throne room scene with the music removed. It's hilarious.
It is, yes. I've seen that one.
So they basically take scenes and they redo the sound designers. It's very good, very funny, so do check them out. That's us.
That is us.
That's quite a meaty ending.
Thank you kindly.
Keep sending in your tweets.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next week when we'll be joined by Liam Reagan from Banjo. He's a Sheffield filmmaker who we talked to briefly last year.
Yes, we did.
But he has now finished filming the horror movie.
Oh, fantastic.
And we'll be talking about that. All that and much, much more.
Nice.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you kindly. Wap 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 wap, weekly geek speak, weekly geek speak. We come out every Friday. We pump ourselves in to your ears so you can laugh and smile. Do 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 do. Weekly geek speak. Andrew's got a beard, I've got a beard, Scott's got a beard. We've all got a face.